Time crawls. From the grove of trees, I keep checking the fields, looking for silhouettes on horseback. I glance at my pocket watch to check the time. Not even midnight yet. The temperature has plummeted, and I wish I could start a fire. But that's out of the question. I hug myself, my breath steaming in the cool air. Nearby, Dickinson blinks at me, his eyes as black as his hair. Exhausted, I slide onto the mossy earth. The ground smells rich, a loamy scent that wraps around me. The moonlight streams through tree branches to dapple the earth with silver. Reaching into my leather pack, I pull out some bread and cheese. I shove a chunk of cheese into the bread and I bite into it. As I eat, I glimpse a firefly trailing through the air. The rumble of incoming horses' hooves startles me. I shove my food back into the bag and cross to the edge of the grove. Fear spirals through me when I see who's thundering closer to me. It's not the other agents. It's the horny Fey Sergeant, and he's aiming right for me. I run back to Dickinson.
You waited for me, didn't you, little minx?
I freeze and turn slowly to face him. His coppery eyes gleam in the shadows, bright as a wolf's.
All alone now? I thought I smelled a lady's scent in the grove as I patrolled again.
I blink demurely. My brother and the rest were chasing a large red stag. I was slowing them down. They should be back soon.
Not too soon, I hope.
He dismounts from his horse and prowls close to me, the wind catching in his dark hair.
You are familiar, of course, with the rites of a Fey Knight.
My mouth goes dry. No, I'm not familiar with the rites of a Fey Knight, but I can guess it's something about taking whatever women they want. In the hollows of my mind, my thoughts are screeching at me to run or to fight. I think of my knives, one in my boot, one in my belt, and a sharpened hairpin tucked in my locks. He won't expect me to attack him. I'm fast and... And what do I have? I'm good at understanding what people want, what they need. Raphael pointed that out to me. I show people the version of me they want to see, but I need to work on making it convincing. Already, I've intuited that he likes innocence. Raphael told the sergeant my father wanted to keep me safe, and that sparked something in his eyes. He wants a pure, untouched woman, a shrinking violet. In that case, I'll give him the opposite of what he wants.
Of course I know the rites of a Fey Knight. I've been with many, and some squires.
What?
At least I think they were knights and squires. It's not like I asked for the official paperwork. A man is a man.
I move closer to him and touch my lips.
But I should really be more careful. One of them had something. I think it's called trench mouth.
I see.
I learned all sorts of tricks from a brothel in Ys.
I touch the side of his face, grinning maniacally.
You're dirt. A disgrace. Diseased. Get back. Get back.
I try to ignore the hallucinations, keeping my face still and the smile on my lips. The sergeant's face twists in disgust as I gently run the tips of my fingers down his cheek.
You're disgusting. Just like that whore in Oliver, I slit her throat. Oliver will be a bloodbath again tonight after the ambush, if that traitor Varys can be believed. You're disgusting, just like that whore in Oliver.
I yank my hand away, startled. He just said the words out loud that I'd heard in my mind. Cold anger etches his face. He looks furious, violent. My instincts are telling me to get the hell away from him as fast as possible, especially when he apparently slit the last whore's throat.
Well, I suppose that's too bad. I'll have to find another man to satisfy my needs.
Panic tightens my chest as I take a quick step back and rush to Mount Dickinson. I spur him on, and he lurches to a gallop through the grove. I cling to his reins as we race between the trees. I'm not exactly sure where I'm going, only that I need to get away from the sergeant. A low branch thrashes at my face as Dickinson thunders toward the road. I've never ridden a horse so fast, but I'm charging along the road that Raphael took earlier. I glance back to where we came from, the border with unoccupied France. In the distance, the veil shimmers with pearly light. I can't return to the meeting point. Raphael told me I should go back through the veil and wait on the other side, but something stops me.
Oliver will be a bloodbath again tonight after the ambush, if that traitor Varys can be believed.
I don't know anyone called Varys, and it's strange for my mind to conjure unknown names. But Oliver is where Raphael and the rest of the group are headed. What if I'm not just hearing random voices? An idea takes root in the hollows of my mind. I heard his words before he said them out loud. The exact phrase.
You're disgusting, Just like that whore in Oliver.
The voice in my thoughts, then out of his mouth. In the past, things the voices told me sometimes turned out to be true. Once, a voice whispered to me that the bookshop manager was having an affair with one of the other employees. Then I accidentally walked in on them in the office, his pants pulled down to his ankles, his pale butt thrusting back and forth. Another time, my mind conjured a voice about a customer in the shop, something about stealing books, two very expensive books, special editions signed by the author. Then I caught him stealing them, trying to run straight out the front door. So what if what I've heard wasn't just nonsense conjured by a stressed mind? What if it was magic that I shouldn't dismiss? Because if my voices can predict the future, there might be a bloodbath scheduled tonight in Alivor. It's a small fey village, built on the ruins of a town after the invasion. Alivor is centered around a train station, some shops and farms, and the tavern where Raphael is supposed to meet the Contact. But it's not a big city. Most of the French abandoned it during the war. The ambush. Was that planned for Raphael and the MI-13 agents? I'm not sure how to get a message to Raphael. Even if I race after them on horseback the entire way, I'm hours behind. They'll get to Alivor within the hour. Maybe less. There's no way I can catch up with them. All I can do is... The train of Gobanos. It goes through Alivor. That's the second stop in the occupied zone, arriving from the south. The Seneschal made us memorize the maps of this region, and also commit the whole train schedule to memory. There's a train leaving the border station at midnight, reaching Alivor at 1 a.m. I steer Dickinson west, heading for the train. As I ride, I pull out my pocket watch, and my pulse roars. I've got 10 minutes to get there.
Yeah!
I spur on my horse. Apparently, he's relieved to find that his timid rider has grown more daring, and he seems to relish the fast run across the road. One thing is clear. The riding lessons at Avalon are paying off. The wind tears at my hair, and I lean over Dickinson's neck, urging him to run faster. The dirt road carves through cornfields, and I race through a derelict village. In the distance, I see the flickering warmth of gas lamps. Balconies hang over the street, and the windows are barred to the night. A clock tower rises high above the town, and when I glance at it, my breath catches. Midnight. In the distance, I see steam billows, and my heart sinks. I've missed it. My chest tightens, but I urge Dickinson on, and we race to the station. The building is stone, painted white. An open field runs alongside it. Gripping Dickinson's reins, we race to catch up. The train of Gobanos is enormous, with a black and crimson engine. Billows of steam burst into the air above it, and the mist snakes around the train. I've never seen a train like this, one with shimmering cars that gleam with silver and gold, others so dark they seem to suck in all the light around them. How many train cars? 30? 40? Impossible to count. Dickinson gallops faster, and my chest thuds at the sight of a boulder in our way. But the horse is already leaping high above it, and for a second, it almost seems like we're flying. I bite my tongue as we hit the ground and taste blood. But we've reached the train, and I'm about 5 carriages from the rear. It's accelerating now, so I can't waste another moment. All of this seems mad, an impossible feat the old Nia would never even dream of doing. My heart is in my throat as I lean toward the rungs on the side of the train. I try to clutch at a ladder jutting out of a carriage, my fingers brushing it, but it's already gone. I've got 4 more cars before I've lost it. I manage to grip the next one, but my feet catch in the stirrups. I lurch free and nearly fall off the horse. 2 more carriages, but I don't reach out. I let the penultimate carriage go ahead as I free my right foot from the stirrup, then the left. I'm gripping the saddle with one hand, wondering if I'm about to die. Last carriage. I swing my hand and grab a rung. The force of the train yanks me off my mount. My breath stops, as for a few seconds, I dangle above the ground. Then I manage to grab the rung with my free hand and put my feet on the bottom rung. Clinging, shaking, I look back. Adrenaline courses through me. Dickinson is already dozens of yards away, staring after me. And I'm on the train of Gobanos, hurtling deep into Fey France. Exactly as Raphael told me not to do. As I cling for dear life to this ladder, the train pistons chug beneath me. I can't stay like this, hanging off the train. If the Fey spot me, I'll instantly be recognized as a spy. I glance down at the earth, speeding beneath my feet. I need to force myself to climb up. In the whipping wind, it's hard to convince myself to let go. My muscles agree and are locked rigid. Finally, I force myself to unclench my left fist. I grasp at the next rung on the ladder, and then, with a quick upward shift, move my right hand as well. Fear rakes at my chest. Another rung. And another. At last, I reach the top of the carriage, clinging to the metal bars to steady myself. Desperately, I search for a way inside the carriage. There's nothing. The carriage's roof is solidly shut. But then I notice a trapdoor. Unfortunately, it's on the next car over. I grip the rungs on the roof tightly as the train races through a darkened village. With a hammering heart, I crawl across the carriage roof, flattening myself on the smooth surface. Then, on my hands and knees, I shift forward, grabbing for any handholds I can find. Gritting my teeth, I crawl a few feet more to the edge of the carriage. My stomach swoops at the sight of the gap between the cars and the ground racing by beneath the train. The chasm yawns before me. There's only one way across. I have to jump. And if I fall, I'll be crushed to a pulp beneath the train. I force myself to crouch at the edge, and then I shuffle back a few steps. Before I can second-guess the wisdom of my decision, I take a running leap. Time seems to slow as I hurtle through the air, the wind rushing over me. I'm certain I've made a terrible mistake, but I land hard on the next carriage, my jaws snapping at the impact. Reaching for one handhold at a time, I make my way to the trapdoor. When I get to it, I yank the handle. The trapdoor is metal and ridiculously heavy. I heave it open a crack and peer inside. Not a passenger carriage, thank the gods, just cargo. Moonlight streams onto piles of crates around the edges of the carriage. There's no ladder. I'll have to jump, but the carriage floor looks far away. I open the hatch further and hang my feet over the edge. I inch inside and let go, then plummet to the floor of the cargo car, pain shooting through my ankle and up my leg.
Shit!
I stumble to the side. I've twisted my ankle badly. I roll onto my butt and grip my leg. If only Raphael were here to work his healing magic. I can almost picture him cradling my ankle in his hands, stroking his fingertips over exactly where it hurts, the heat from his magic pulsing over my skin. But when I stop imagining it, the pain races back through my leg. My heart is a wild beast. I'm resting on the quiver and arrows, and they dig into my back. I'm dirty and wet, and I've torn my pants. My face burns and feels sticky, and when I wipe my forehead, my fingertips come out smeared maroon, drying blood. I think I cut it when I was racing through the branches in the grove. Oh, and I bit my tongue. I have the quiver, but I lost the bow on the way. Still, despite the injured ankle, this is overall a success. I'm alive and on the way to Alivor. I open the door and leap off just as the train chugs away. Pain shoots up my leg. No one seems to notice my awkward tumble out of the train. I push myself up on the stone platform, putting my weight on my good leg, and dust myself off. The train station is made of glass, like a greenhouse, and lit with golden lamps. A clock tower rises from it, and I mark the time as 1:05. The large clock face is cracked, maybe from the war 15 years ago. No wonder most humans abandoned this place. Up ahead, a few people hurry through the station's open archway to carriages waiting on the other side. I hop on my good foot, one hand on the glass as I exit the station. The town built up around the train station is small, with a cobbled road that passes between shops and shuttered homes on either side. The shops are closed for the night, the windows dark, but down the street I see the lights of a tavern, the sign hanging above the door creaking forlornly in the wind. A few soldiers linger by the station, and my spine stiffens at the sight of their blue coats. I try to disguise my limp as I walk. Clenching my teeth, I mask the pain racing up my ankle. When I glance to my right, my breath catches. Between two shops is a view of dark, empty fields, and deep in the fields stands a gallows. 5 silhouettes swing from ropes under the light of the moon. Fear settles into my bones. This is the true face of the Fae occupation, these bodies swaying above the grass. For a moment, I wonder if one of them is Freya, and dismiss the notion. These bodies have been here for a while. They look stiff, and the faint scent of death carries on the wind. I shiver and hurry on. Based on the time, the others should be here soon, coming from the other side of the town square, not from the station. Slowly, I make my way to the tavern, where warm lights beam from the windows. The outside is painted black with golden stars, and the sign depicts a painting of a headless woman. This must be the meeting spot. I'd heard them saying the name of the location was a place called the Silent Woman. As I get closer, I survey the layout. An agent should always have an escape route. The tavern has 2 arched wooden doors inset into a stone building. Oak trees grow around the side door, twining together above the entrance. I wonder if it's a kitchen door. Behind the tavern is a stable. Passing by, I glance at the tavern's warmly lit window. A black cat sits on a stack of books, flicking her tail back and forth. I don't notice much else because I'm not stopping to linger. Mentally, I'm racking my brain for every detail of the map I memorized during the briefing. I'm fairly certain they'll be coming from the southwest. Once I get past the town square, I take a left onto a dirt road with nothing but a few scattered homes and fields stretching out into the darkness. I move slowly to avoid putting weight on my left foot. At last, I leave the houses and village behind. Out here, stone walls surround patches of farmland, and wildflowers line the dirt road. Fear crawls into my stomach, worries that I'm too late, that they already got here before I arrived, that they've been ambushed, taken. Desperate, I search for a sign of them in the darkness. Minutes crawl by. Then I see them at last, a trio riding toward me. Relief washes over me as I recognize Freya's auburn hair. And as they get closer, Raphael and Arzel's bright white shirts stand out from the shadows. Raphael leads the way. In the shadows, his pale eyes pierce the dark. When he's only 20 feet away, his horse slows, and his jaw drops. He dismounts and strides toward me. A line forms between his eyebrows as he stares at me.
Nia, what are you doing here?
I had to warn you. I think you might be stepping into an ambush.
How did you get here before us?
Did I hear the word ambush?
I look back at the main road, but don't see anyone. I heard someone talking about an ambush in Alivar, and since there's nothing else around here but the Silent Woman, I thought the ambush might be meant for you.
What do you mean you overheard someone? Who were you listening in on when you were waiting for us in the woods?
It's tough to explain.
Try.
It's just something I overheard. That's all you need to know. But if it's true, your life could be in danger. The hilt of Raphael's sword gleams in the darkness.
Fine. We should at least check what we're walking into. Freya, can you slip ahead and check the tavern stable? Arzel, circle around the building. Have a look in the windows, the roofs, the shadows. Search for anything that doesn't quite seem right. And make sure no one sees you.
Without another word, the pair ride off into the darkness. Once we're alone, Raphael folds his arms, his penetrating silver gaze searing me.
What is it that you're not telling me?
Sometimes I hear voices. I used to assume they were nonsense, but occasionally the things the voices say come true. He lets that last sentence float between us for a few seconds.
Okay. Tell me more.
When I was waiting for you, the sergeant cornered me in the forest.
He what? What happened?
Nothing. He was easy enough to get rid of. But as it happened, I heard a voice in my mind. A voice that mentioned an ambush in Alivar. And I also heard a sentence just before the sergeant said it out loud. Like I was hearing the future, maybe. I didn't know that the bit about the ambush was accurate, but I didn't want to take the risk of ignoring it.
A disembodied voice in your head warned you about an ambush in Alivar.
And he mentioned a traitor. Someone called Varys. Raphael's eyes open wider.
How did you hear that name?
I literally just told you how I heard it.
His name is confidential. Only I know it. Not even Arzel and Freya know it. Varys is the person we're supposed to be meeting.
I could hear the future then. The sergeant's thoughts said, Alivar will be a bloodbath again tonight after the ambush, if that traitor Varys can be believed. Doesn't seem like a good sign, does it?
No.
His gaze slides down my body.
What happened to your leg? You were limping when I first saw you, and you're favoring your right leg.
I sprained my ankle jumping into a train car from the roof.
You did what?
That's how I got here. I took the Gobinos train. It was the only way I could make it here on time. But I didn't have a ticket, so I had to board the train through the roof.
Why do I feel like you'll be the death of me?
He kneels down. What are you doing?
Healing you. The left one, yes?
He brushes the back of his knuckles over my ankle where it hurts the most. How does he know exactly where I need him to heal me? The heat of his magic whispers over my skin, a glowing caress that makes my eyes flutter. He slides his hand around my ankle, but the sensation of his magic doesn't stop there. It's a faint kiss of velvet stroking up my thigh. As his magic sweeps over my skin, the pain dissolves, leaving only a throbbing heat in its wake. I lick my lips, my breath growing shallow.
Are you nearly finished?
He pulls his hand away like he's been burned.
I'm helping you.
It's fine now, thank you.
He stands, and I breathe in his earthy, masculine scent.
Glad it's fine now. You're rather tightly wound, you know that?
Well, we are on a dangerous mission.
His gaze moves past my shoulder, and I turn to see Freya galloping toward us, with Arzel close behind.
Nothing in the stable.
But?
I mean, absolutely nothing. No other horses. Doesn't that seem odd?
Something seems off. I peered into tavern windows and no one looked relaxed. It's the middle of the night, and they should be drunk off their asses on mead. Instead, they looked stiff and tense. It looks like a funeral, not a party. And there are no musicians. Whenever I came here before, there was always music.
Raphael stares at me for several beats.
Okay, we're not going in. It's a trap. Everyone, on your horses. Nia, you're riding with me.
I climb into the saddle and shift forward, gripping the horse's pommel. Raphael mounts behind me, pressing close against me, his body warm and firm. He reaches around me for the reins. I lean back against his chest. Heat radiates from his body, warming mine.
Let's go. Back the way we came.
We've hardly started forward when we hear the sound of pounding hooves behind us. Three riders are racing toward us.
They found us.
Let's go.
He pulls the reins and we take off at a gallop.
Hold on tightly.
I cling to the saddle's pommel and he spurs the horse onto a dirt road carved between two fields. Arrows zoom by. I glance back. Freya and Arzel are keeping pace with us, but the three bowmen are closing in. Our attackers loose another arrow, and Raphael hugs me closer, leaning to the left slightly just as the arrow zips past. Up ahead, something catches my eye, the glint of steel in the moonlight. A drumbeat of dread thumps in my chest. I can just about make out a group of Fae soldiers racing through the darkened fields, ready to block our path.
Do you see them?
Yes.
Raphael isn't slowing. In front of us, the Fae soldiers rush into the road, wielding spears and swords. Raphael releases the reins with one hand and draws his sword. I want to pull out my knife, but it's taking all my strength to stay on the horse. A Fae soldier swings for us, and a spear hurtles through the air. I clamp my eyes shut. When I open my eyes again, we're past the soldiers. A sharp throb on my arm alerts me that I've been cut, and blood drenches my shoulder.
Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Raphael, company!
Glancing behind, I see more riders in uniform racing after us. The one in front has long white hair, and his teeth are bared in a bloodthirsty snarl. Our horses are tired from a day of traveling, and Raphael's mount is carrying two riders. We can't outrun them. Raphael yanks the reins, and our horse veers sharply off the dirt road. Across the field is an oak grove, silvered in the moonlight. Another glance back tells me the riders have followed us. The one in the lead is a few yards away from Arzel, and the Fae soldier raises a sword. Freya pulls her mount sideways to collide with the attacker. The soldier's horse rears, toppling over. To my relief, Freya manages to keep her balance and catches up with us. With his crossbow in hand, Arzel turns. He shoots a bolt toward the riders.
Get down!
We hurtle into the trees, the boughs arching over our path. I bend over the saddle and Raphael leans closer. His body pressed to mine, we ride through the foliage, the earth and the gnarled roots beneath us dappled with moonlight. A shout rings out from behind until we break out of the grove and race into a field of berry bushes. The breeze whips over me and we straighten again. Two soldiers follow us now, but Arzel is lagging behind. There is an arrow lodged in his side.
Arzel has been hit!
I've got them!
Knocking an arrow, Arzel aims at the Fae soldier with the crossbow.
Keep going! I'll hold them off!
He looses the arrow as he rides, and it pierces the soldier's throat. I turn, eyes wide, as the second rider catches up to Arzel. He's still trying to reload, and the soldier has closed the distance. Fear screams through my nerve endings. The Fae soldier swings his sword. I shut my eyes and cling to the pommel. Behind me, I feel the solid wall of Raphael's chest. When I open my eyes at last, I see Freya fire at the final rider. Her arrow hits him in the eye and he falls off the horse. But Arzel is no longer with us. I can't see him where he fell, just the silhouette of his horse, riderless. Freya rides at our side, her eyes glassy with tears. Arzel is gone. The veil glows in the distance, ethereal silver-violet radiance in the darkness. A pearl beaming from the shadows. It would be gorgeous if I didn't ache all over, if our horses weren't stumbling with exhaustion, and if the sadness of losing Arzel didn't weigh us down with the cold pall of grief. As we draw closer, the veil's hum buzzes in my ears. I need to summon the reserves of my energy to get us across, but I feel nauseated and exhausted. I'm pretty sure I'm dehydrated. I could almost fall asleep against Raphael with his arms wrapped around me. The way he shifts against me as he rides makes me want to close my eyes, and I lean back into the sensual heat and strength of his body. I feel his heartbeat through my back, and my eyes drift shut. After the horrors of the night, it's strangely comforting.
Are you falling asleep on me, Pixie?
Of course not. I'm always fully alert.
You might as well rest if you can.
Riders!
I turn to look, but I can't see a thing in the dark.
Where?
Following us on horse. I can't see them well in the dark, but I can hear the hooves getting closer.
Raphael tugs on the reins, slowing his horse to a stop.
We need to dismount. My horse is at the end of her strength. She won't be able to go any further.
Same here.
and we are more visible when mounted. Since I can hear their hooves, they might be able to hear ours.
Raphael slides off his horse, then helps me dismount.
Silently now.
We creep forward, leading our horses through the grassy field and doing our best to make as little noise as possible. As we move, dawn starts to break, the sky blushing with coral, blending into indigo. As the sun rises, the pearly barrier reflects the dawn light. Rust, violet, tangerine. And then, all at once, Freya and Raphael halt. I take another step and freeze as well.
They're coming right for us. Let's go.
He releases the reins and slaps his horse. Freya does the same, her horse following Raphael's mount.
That'll buy us some time. Let's run.
I race after his silhouette, desperately trying to keep pace. We run crouched, trying to stay in the shadows, but as we get closer to the veil, it becomes impossible. Now the magical barrier is washing us in a shimmering glow. We make a mad dash through the grass, and the veil hums in my ears, prickling my skin like 1,000 tiny needles. Freya reaches it first and whirls to look at me.
Can we cross?
No, wait! I try to concentrate on the magic, but I can feel the weight of their eyes on me.
They're getting closer. Come on, Nia.
Let her focus.
I can feel it, the mesh of energy, the thinness of the weaker sections. If I channel my powers at one of them, the veil will crack and let us through. If I don't figure this out now, we're going to die at the hands of the Fae.
We'll have to go through. Either we live, or we die. We can't afford to get caught, and they're almost here.
Wait! I concentrate, trying to forget about everything. The people whose lives depend on me, the mission, Arzel, whose death will be meaningless if I don't get us through. Only the veil matters.
Yeah, it's now or never.
I turn to glance at the incoming riders. They're so frighteningly close, just a few yards away. The leader's eyes bore straight into me, a malicious golden gaze. With a snarl, he raises an enormous axe above his head. My fear nearly paralyzes me, but I use it instead to drown out my other thoughts. I hurl it at the veil, unfocused, directionless. The entire veil flickers. Raphael grips my arm and pulls me across. I stumble, racing for a few steps through narrow fields crisscrossed by stone walls. An oak forest spreads across the landscape. Coppery light kisses the tree leaves. My body feels frozen, shivering. Icy air stings my skin and my teeth chatter. It looks like spring, but it feels like the dead of January. The hum rises in my ears, and I can see the riders through the haze of the veil. They rear their horses to a halt on the other side, and one of them raises his bow. Fuck. We might be through the magical barrier, but it won't stop arrows. Something whizzes past me, but it's coming from behind. Freya's arrow finds a soldier's throat on the other side.
Keep going.
He and Freya are off again. I follow after them, but my muscles feel frozen. I'm shivering violently, my body bitten by the cold. The glacial air pierces my body down to my marrow.
Nia, let's go.
My muscles are ice. An arrow from beyond the veil zooms by, inches from my face. Go! Raphael rushes back and scoops me up, pressing me against his firm chest. Enfolding me in his arms, he starts to run. As we reach the shelter of the forest, I'm shivering against Raphael's chest. He slows once we get out of range.
You're freezing.
I use too much magic. And yet, my body feels boiling now, flushed. But I'm not cold anymore. I'm too hot.
You're going into hypothermia.
He raises his eyes, and the rising sunlight catches them as they spark gold.
Freya, wait. She lost too much heat. We need to help, now.
I sink into oblivion. I'm in Los Angeles, in my childhood bed, surrounded by my stuffed animals. My head feels hot. My throat burns. I just woke up from a terrible nightmare. One of a man with black hair and a spiked crown standing before me, a sword in his hand. My room looks scarier than usual, with shadows climbing over the walls. I don't know if the man from my nightmare is hiding in one of them. Panic crackles through me.
Mom?
Sometimes she doesn't come when I call. Sometimes she's not at home, especially when Dad goes away on work trips. Now I'm sure the evil king is lurking in my room, and I'm too sick to fight back.
Mom! Mom!
Hot tears run down my cheeks. It's hard to breathe. Something is wrong with my chest, and I can't get enough air. My throat is closing up, and I'm sure I need a doctor. I want to go into the bathroom for medicine, but if I step onto the ground, the murderous king will grab my feet. Is he the one stealing my breath?
Mom! Dad!
Everything is moving up and down, a rocking motion. Normally, this would make me feel relentlessly queasy, but right now, I feel warm and safe.
Magic thrums over my skin, making my pulse speed up. There's something particularly enjoyable wrapping around me. My eyes flutter open. Bare skin on bare skin, Raphael's naked body pressed against mine. One of his arms is hooked around my waist, pulling me back into his abs. His arm is tight around my ribs, and my camisole is pulled up to just beneath my breasts. I'm not totally naked, I realize. I'm wearing underwear, but nothing else. I think it might be the same for Raphael behind me. My exposed lower back curves against his stomach, and his legs are wrapped around me. Blankets cover us. I turn to look at him, and a tendril of my dark hair falls before my eyes. He looks back at me from under his long eyelashes.
You're awake, Pixie.
What's happening? He props his head on his fist to look down at me, but he's not pulling his arm away from my waist. Except now, his muscles grow more relaxed against me.
You had hypothermia. I had to warm you.
I frown up at him. This never happened before when I used magic. At least, it wasn't this extreme.
You'll need to learn to modulate it, and then it won't be as bad. You disabled the entire veil this time, for at least a few seconds. Hundreds of miles of a magical barrier. That was a tremendous surge of magic you unleashed. You nearly died, Nia. When we get back, you'll need a lot more training before I'm willing to let you risk your life again.
My gaze trails down his broad shoulder and his chiseled bicep, tattooed with dark lines that sweep over his collarbone. I have the strongest impulse to run my fingers over those inked vines. But I remember what happened the last time we kissed.
Is there any reason you still need to be in bed with me? I'm warm now.
I suppose not.
He rises from the bed and I steal a glimpse at him. He's wearing only a small black pair of underwear, and my gaze trails over his powerful body. He pulls on his trousers, and I watch the sculpted muscles shift in his broad shoulders and back. His gaze returns to me, and I jerk my head away to pretend I wasn't staring.
Do you need some water?
Yeah, I think so. Still shirtless, he crosses to a table and pours me a cup of water. For the first time, I look around the room. Velvet upholstered chairs stand against mahogany walls, their surfaces carved with nautical symbols. Light streams through round windows over a writing desk littered with papers and an inkwell. I lie in a lush bed with soft blankets. Raphael hands me the cup of water. I take a few tentative sips and sink back into the pillows. Thanks.
You saved our lives, you know. If you hadn't shown up in Alava, we would have stepped into that ambush. Varys betrayed us. Either he double-crossed us or they caught him, tortured him, and got the information out of him. How to summon us into their territory. Either way, he's compromised.
Traitor Varys. He pulls on a white shirt and starts to button it.
You heard a voice in your mind, and it spoke true.
That's pretty much it.
And this has happened before?
I always thought I was hallucinating. But now that I know I'm Demi-Fay, I'm starting to wonder if there's some magic at play. He pulls out a chair and sits in it.
Another power. You have two.
Wraith says that when one person has several powers, they interfere with each other. Diametric powers. They're cursed and drive a person mad.
And you think the voices tell you about the future? Like Tanna's ability to predict?
My mind flicks back over some of the times I heard voices screaming in my head. Sometimes they came true. Other times it was lies or panicked thoughts or just a litany of insecurities. Occasionally, pornographic thoughts boomed in my skull. About me, usually. Occasionally, they talked as if I was merely a passerby listening to a conversation of someone else. With Tarquin, it was hostile. When the sea serpent attacked us, it was a voice screaming that we were going to die. All of them were raw emotions. All of them were triggered when others were near me.
I think I might be telepathic. The voices reflect the thoughts of the people around me, what they feel or think.
Raphael folds his arms, leaning back in the chair.
Well, you're right about powers interfering with each other. If you have two powers, it might explain your difficulty with controlling your magic.
I nod, thinking of what I've learned. Two powers intertwined weaken and destabilize each other. In some cases, over time, they cancel each other completely. And in other cases, the person possessing them is torn apart, either mentally or physically. In less than a month, I've gone from being a bookseller with no powers to being a supernatural spy to having one power too many. A line forms between Raphael's eyebrows.
We need to suppress your telepathy. If we're lucky, we can eliminate it altogether.
I've always wanted to get rid of the voices, but suddenly, I'm not so sure. My telepathy saved your lives.
And I am immensely grateful. But like I said, you almost died. We have several telepaths in MI-13. We only have two sentinels. During this mission, you've demonstrated that you're on the way to becoming an amazing agent. But if we don't suppress your second power, you could die.
Your bedside manner needs improvement. Nausea rises in my gut, climbing up in my throat. I don't want to vomit in this bed, but I don't feel strong enough to get up yet. Why am I getting seasick now? I was fine a minute ago.
Well, that was the effect of my magic. It didn't do much good to heal your magical affliction, but it helped with your seasickness.
I stare at him, suddenly wishing he'd climb back in bed.
But you kicked me out.
Perhaps that was a mistake. I turn away from him, pulling the covers up over my shoulders. I feel the bed compress as he slides in behind me, his body curving around mine. Already, his magic is working its way over my skin. When I close my eyes, I conjure up the memory of being ghosted. After our kiss, I didn't see him for 3 days. And when I found him in the vineyards, he told me that he had lost all interest in me, that he had better things to do than to entertain a spoiled girl from America. Raphael clearly had better options, like the elegant and sophisticated women he spent time with at the chateau. Or women like Ginevra Pendragon. She's a Pendragon. No one would call her trash. When I was 17, I spent the rest of the summer lying on the floor of my room, miserable. His arm curls protectively around my waist. For just a moment, all my thoughts narrow to the feeling of his skin against mine. Mentally, I jolt myself out of the pleasure. Do not let yourself fall for him again, Nia. I spent years building up my mental barriers against gorgeous men like him, and I would not let the walls crumble just because of his perfect body. No more thinking of Raphael. Not like that. He's going to end up with someone like Ginevra. I'd be an idiot to think of him as anything else.